This is Digital Story Podcast number 626, March 13th, 2018. Today's theme is the Anti-Zoom Challenge. I'm Derek Story. I have three lenses sitting on my drafting table at the studio. 28mm, 45mm, and 85mm. And each day when I go for a walk to deliver orders for the film camera shop, I pick one. And everything that I shoot for the next 40 minutes is with that focal length. In today's TDS podcast, I discuss why I think this practice has made me a better photographer. All three of those lenses are Zeiss full-frame lenses, and they go on Contax 35mm film cameras. So the focal lengths are exactly what I said, 28, 45, and 85, so there's no cropping or anything like that involved. And that's a really nice array of focal lengths. Now, I also really like the 35mm focal length on full frame, but since I have the 45, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, then it felt like I should go a little wider if I really wanted variety with the 28mm, which made more sense going 28, 45, and 85. So at this point, you might be going, well, why do you even bother with any of this? Why don't you just put a zoom on that goes from 28 to 85 and call it a day? Those of you that have ever participated in any sort of creative adventure like this, you probably have your own answers to that. But here's the thing. I love zoom lenses, and I shoot with them a lot, and I usually leave them on my digital cameras as the default lens. So on my Olympus Pen F, I have the 14 to 42 easy zoom. And on the Pentax KP, I have the 18 to 50 pancake zoom. So those are my default lenses. And the digital cameras are more work cameras for me. When I really need a shot, when I need to just grab the camera and shoot and make sure I get it, then I like having the zoom lenses on there. And I use zoom lenses with film too. However, not as much. And the reason being that when I'm in more of a creative mood, more of an artistic mood, then primes seem to get the juices flowing. And this is really at the heart of what I want to talk about on this show. Photographers often talk about, well, you know, how do I get, you know, motivated? How do I get the juices flowing again? How do I get excited? Sort of saying that, well, I'm in a rut and I'm just really not seeing very well right now, or I don't feel like I'm creating anything that's very interesting. And I suppose that happens to people. I mean, just like I have to confess, I've never been bored a day in my life, ever. I can remember as a little kid, I was never bored. As a teenager, never bored. As a young adult, and now as a mature adult, never bored. So I'm not the best person in this particular category in terms of being excited about life and being excited about photography. I just sort of am all the time. That being said, however, I do want to be as creative as possible, and I do get lazy. And this is the thing that I have to watch out for me. I get lazy. And what I mean by lazy in my world of photography is that having a nice zoom lens on the camera, putting it in program mode, shooting raw, and having, you know, programmed evaluative metering, and then basically all I have to do is zoom, point, and shoot, and just take pictures that way. Now, I get a lot of nice shots that way. You know, the advantage to using that setup is that you can react quickly when you're out and about. So you see something, pick up the camera, shoot, and you will probably get it or come darn close. So it's good for that. What is not so good for are stimulating those little parts in your brain that are creative. They make you go beyond being lazy into searching and exploring and wondering and inquiry and all that kind of stuff. And in order for me, anyway, to get those little parts of my brain doing that, being activated, glowing, a little picture of my brain and these little spots lighting up, I need to do a few tricks. And one of the tricks that I have learned is shooting with a prime lens. Now, why does that cause that to happen? What is the cause and effect of using a prime lens to being more creative? Well, because when shooting with a prime lens, and I'm going to talk about the individual lenses in a second, but when shooting with a prime lens, there's a lot of problem solving involved. And this is one of the reasons why I like to do it with film cameras too, because I'm already slowing down a bit. I'm already wanting to get more of my artist on, and film cameras work with that for me. However, everything that I'm talking about right now works with any interchangeable digital camera. So there you go. And to some extent, right, even our smartphones that lock us in at one or two focal lengths, as long as we're not allowed to pinch. No pinching involved, right? No pinching and zooming there. But if we just shoot at the two focal lengths or the one focal length that we have on the phone, all of this can work with that as well. So here we go. So let's take the Zeiss 45mm f2.8 pancake lens, probably my favorite manual focus lens of all time. And it has been that way for a while, and I don't see it changing. Why do I like this lens so much? Well, first of all, it's very thin. It is a true pancake lens. The Tessar lens design has been around for a long time. It doesn't have a whole lot of elements. However, that Tessar design has an interesting quality that is different than other lenses, and it's very sharp. So it has a lot of things going for it, and I don't have to give up that much aperture. F2.8 is not bad at all for banging around. So this is a pretty handy lens, considering it adds virtually, you know, no thickness to the camera. So I have that one on a lot, because then my camera will fit in my camera bag, and I can still have my Pentax KP in there. I can still have my Olympus Pen F, and I still have a small bag. You know, all of this fits in a Retrospective 7, a ThinkTank Retrospective 7. I don't carry around a lot of gear, but what I do carry, I use a lot. So back to the Zeiss 45. So I'm walking around with the Zeiss 45. It gives me a little bit more elbow space than a 50, and you can actually feel that, but obviously not as much room to operate as the 35 or the 28. So when I'm shooting people, for example, then that lens forces me to get closer to the people than I probably really want to, because I don't like cropping my film images that much. You know, it's not digital where you have a whole bunch of megapixels and you go, oh, I'll just take the center out. On my film shots, I try to get them in camera the way I want them in the end. So the 45 forces me to get a little closer to people than I want. So then now suddenly I'm thinking, okay, do I really want this shot? Am I going to say something to this person? If I am, what am I going to say to them? Maybe I'll just shoot him from behind. So now I'm asking all these questions, right? All these questions. And I'm thinking about this and thinking about my position, all this sort of stuff. And all the little areas in my brain start to light up when I do this. And then suddenly I think of something. I go, oh, what if I get over here? What if I get down low? What if I just come right up to the person and say, hey, this is a film camera. I don't really know how to use it. Can I take your picture? You know, just any sort of thing like that. And my brain really starts to work. Then, on the other hand, with this 45, what if I want to shoot something big? What if I want to shoot a building or something that's kind of large? And if I stand where I normally stand with a zoom, then, you know, with a zoom, all I do is just crank the zooming ring so that it's wide, and then I get everything fit in, take the shot. I can't do that with a 45, so suddenly I have to start thinking about where I'm going to stand. Can I get over there? Maybe I should go over to that overpass over there. That gives me a different angle, gives me a little bit more room. And then I go over to that overpass, right? I walk over there. Maybe it takes me 5 minutes to walk over there. And I get up there, and I'm looking, and I go, wow, this is a great shot. And I never would have walked over to that overpass and seen that shot had I zoom on there. Or, you know, the odds are really, really low, unless I was like Mr. Creative with a zoom that day, which I rarely am. The zoom, I would have stayed where I initially saw the shot, just widened the zoom ring, and then taken the photograph. With the 45, I couldn't do that, so I had to change positions. And when I did change positions, I found another spot that I liked so much better that I really didn't know was there. And then, so now I'm all excited, right? I've seen the shot. I like it. I take it. And I want more. I want more. I get greedy. So suddenly now I'm going, ooh, what if I go over there? What if I go under the bridge over there and shoot up? Or what if I do this? What if I do that? And suddenly I've taken four or five shots from angles that I never would have explored, that I never would have thought of with a zoom. And I know you're thinking, okay, Derek, you could have done those same things with the zoom on. And you're absolutely right. I agree with you 100%. Problem is, I don't. And that is the problem. I mean, I will sometimes, sort of like being on a diet. I start out really well, and then I just go, I really need something to eat right now. I'm super hungry. And then I do that. And then I eat something. I'm kind of like that with a zoom lens. I go, I really should go. I'm just going to take this shot. This is a pretty good shot. And plus, I need to get, back to the office, or I need to do this, or I need to get home. It's funny how it works. That is with the 45, which is, my most versatile prime lens, the ones that I use the most. However, then I can start getting comfortable with that. I can. It's crazy. Now I'm going, I go on the same walk every day. Well, I have two different routes that I can take. When I deliver packages from here, the studio, to the post office, for the film camera shop. So I take one of two routes. So I see those routes all the time. And yes, things change, but basically same thing, right? And if I'm just shooting with the 45 all the time, then I can start to get a little immune to things. So then what I do is then I change focal length. So I mix it up. I mean, I have to keep messing with myself for this to work. My next favorite focal length to go to is the 85 millimeter. So I put that on there, and now I take the same walk and I look through the camera. And that's one of the things I like to do. I just look through the camera, even if I'm not going to take a shot. I just like looking through the camera and seeing what the world looks like. So then I pick the camera up and put it to my eye and I go, whoa, this is a lot different. Everything is so close. Everything's so narrow. What am I going to do? So then I'm kind of looking around and, kind of swinging the camera around and looking at things. And then I'll find something. I'll find a detail of something that I hadn't seen before with the 45. I go, wow, that's interesting. The way, those two flowers are kind of interlocking on this nice wood fence. With the 45, that would be a really boring shot, right? Because, they would be in the center of the frame, and then there'd be just like a whole bunch of distracting things around them. However, with the 85, I point over there, and it's really much more isolated. And suddenly that shot is interesting. I go, that's an interesting shot. Why didn't I ever see that before? Well, because I had the 45 on, that's why I didn't see it before. And I don't have, Zumo vision, where I can just set the focal length for my eyes and then just see the world that way. So I actually have to look through the camera. So I take those shots. Let's say I take those shots. And now I'm looking around again, just like with the 45. Start to get a little excited. Go, ooh, getting greedy here. And then how about that over there? Well, that's a nice detail. That's pretty cool. I shoot that. I find this, I find that, and suddenly I'm shooting the same route, but completely different than I had with the 45. I'm seeing different things, and I'm seeing similar things differently. All of this is going on. And then, of course, for people shots, it's a blast. Oh my gosh. So much more fun than the 45, because I don't have to get as close to them. I can talk to them 8 feet away and say, hey, I have this new film camera. I don't really know how to use it. Can I take your picture? And it's a much more comfortable conversation for me 8 feet away than 4 feet away. So, and they go, yeah, sure, weird person who's very tall. And so then I go ahead and do that, open the aperture all the way up to 2.8 maybe, and just get a very nice background and get a lovely shot. And so when I come back, after a couple of days of just shooting with the 85, those shots, to me, are much, much different than the 45. And one of the things that starts to happen with this is that when I only have one lens on for an entire roll of film, all the shots begin to develop a sort of continuity to them. It's almost like a photo essay. Even if the subject matter isn't totally related, it's still kind of a photo essay because my approach and how I'm using the lens, you know, has a lot of similarity. So then there's the 28, and the 28 to me is the most challenging lens. When I was a reporter, when I was a newspaper reporter, always had the 50 on there. I always started with the 50, and that was the way that I saw the world. And then if I needed a little bit more magnification, then I would put on the 85 or the 135. And if I went wide, I usually only went as far as 35 millimeters, rarely went 28 millimeters back in the day. Well, now, you know, I'm forcing myself to shoot with a 28. And the challenge for me with a 28 is much different than with a 45 or the 85. The challenge for me is creating a composition that's compelling because I like fewer elements. I like isolating things. I like stuff like that. You know, I struggle with more of the big compositions, and especially if they're shown on, you know, a smartphone or a tablet or something where you're not viewing them very big, they're just not as exciting to me. Now, if I can make a giant poster of that shot, then it's a lot more interesting. But most of the time, work isn't viewed that way these days, even the film work, because the film gets digitized and then we're looking at it on a phone or a computer or whatever. That's where I struggle with a 28. So how do I make compelling shots? How do I create compositions that are exciting to me without just being, you know, way too much information, which is kind of what I feel like a lot of times. So then I'm really challenged. I really have to work. I really have to get the creativity going. And then I find a shot. And a lot of times the shots that I find is where I get close to something and then the surrounding elements are supporting it and not distracting whatever I'm getting close to. I will use distortion, but a lot of times I'm keeping the plane of the camera parallel to the plane of the subject and not working with distortion. I'm not against distortion at all. But most of the time, my starting point is to have the planes parallel to help eliminate or really downplay distortion. Then I'm using a whole different approach to the photography. And just like with the 45 and just like with the 85, I do warm up. I do start to see the world that way. And I do start to get shots. And then I'm all excited again. Not that I ever calm down, mind you. This is why using these three lenses, instead of using a zoom that covers the same range, is so much different. It is so very different. I just feel like that at the end of the day, I'm using more of my brain. And I also feel like I'm being a lot more creative. I'm a lot more excited. Probably I feel a lot more like a craftsman at the end of the day too, that I have skills that I can just walk around with this one lens and get cool shots. So that's why I think the anti-zoom challenge is a fun one. And like I said, you can do it with a digital camera, you can do it with a film camera, you can do it with a smartphone, as long as you promise not to pinch. You can do it any number of ways, but try it. You need to give it more than one time. This has to be something that you say that you're gonna do for a week or a couple weeks. And it doesn't have to be the same lens for a couple weeks. You know, you can change. Even if you have, let's say you have an iPhone 10 that has two lenses on it. A number of cameras have two lenses. I'm just picking the 10 because I have a 10. It makes me think of that. So let's say that you're using an iPhone 10. So you have the two lenses. One day, you say, I'm just going to shoot at 1x. And then another day, you say, I'm just going to shoot everything at 2x, the other lens, and go back and forth, or, you know, use whichever one. But you have to stick with whatever decision you make for the entire duration of the shoot, whether that's half an hour, a day, whatever, you know, whatever you're doing on the challenge. So you can do it with any of these types of cameras. And I think you'll have fun. I honestly believe that you will have fun. The other thing that I'll say is that if you don't have prime lenses, they're a good investment. In the next segment, I'm going to talk about 45 millimeter lenses and really show you a variety of options that you have if you're a Micro Four Thirds shooter. That's the nice thing about prime lenses. You can spend a lot or you can get by pretty affordably. And the fact of the matter is they're almost all very, very good. And you can get used lenses. And if you're shooting, let's say, mirrorless, you can get an adapter and invest not very much money for analog prime lenses and adapt them to your camera and shoot that. And that could be a whole different project where, for example, you get a 35mm f2.8 prime lens, you get an adapter, put it on your Micro Four Thirds camera, you're shooting with a 70, put it on a crop sensor mirrorless camera and you're shooting with around 50, and then there's your shoot right there. So you have a lot of options. Give it a try. Try it. And then the other thing that sort of is implied with everything I'm talking about is get out regularly. Take walks as often as possible. Get out, get some fresh air, take your camera with you. Only has to be for 20 minutes. Half an hour is even more fun, and 40 minutes is more fun at that. But what I'm saying is it doesn't have to be a big deal. And you don't have to go to exotic places if you're doing this anti-zoom challenge, because believe me, I'm walking the same path every day. And the anti-zoom challenge keeps it fresh and interesting and keeps me creative. So give it a whirl. And if you have anything to add, I'll post, obviously, the show notes on Facebook, and you can chime in there. I think you'll like it. Some more Micro Four Thirds testing. Are the 40s fabulous? That's the name of a blog post that I found on the Lens Rental blog, and this post is fantastic, I have to tell you. So I put it on Facebook yesterday, which would be, I guess, Monday to you. It's today for me. Anyway, Monday. I put it on Monday. This thing was so interesting to me. I love the Lens Rental blog anyway, because they're just so good at testing stuff. But this one made me leave late for the studio. And if I leave late, I get stuck in traffic, and it was totally worth it. It was totally worth it. So what he's talking about in this one are a handful of 40-ish millimeter lenses, 42.5 and 45 millimeter primarily, that he tested against one another. And these range in cost from $1,400 down to $350. Okay, so you have quite a range here. The lenses that he's talking about is the Voigtlander 42.5mm f0.95, and that's a manual focus lens, for $800. The Olympus 45mm f1.2 Pro, a lens that I've talked about here, for $1,199. The Panasonic 42.5 for $1,398. And then we have the Olympus f1.8, the 45mm f1.8, a lens I have raved about for a long time, for $349. And the Panasonic 42.5 f1.7, and that is also for $348. So we have quite a collection. By the way, I have the links to all of these lenses in the show notes. Are interested in anything I say in this segment, go over to the show notes and you can just click away and just have a blast and really check these things out. So what they did at Lens Rental was they tested these. And I mean, when you read this blog, this is crazy. I mean, all the different tests that they can do. And it's not just sharpness. It's also, you know, field curvature. It's also, they test the multiple copies of each lens. And so then they tell you, you know, what the variance is among the copies in terms of center sharpness. And I mean, it is just wild. And the bottom line is, and as I was talking about in the previous segment, is that these prime lenses are a blast and they're fun. And you can afford one of these lenses, right? A little bit of saving. You can afford one of these lenses and they're all good. So what I'm going to do now, I'm just going to read you a few paragraphs directly from the blog post. It's more kind of the summation, just so you get a feel for these lenses, and then you can go and explore more on your own. And again, these are for Micro Four Thirds shooters. So the performance I'm reading now, The performance of the Voigtlander 42.5 f/0.95 is spectacular. Of course, you also have to be okay with manual focusing, but still, that's a lens worth considering. So that's a manual focus lens, and it's a beautiful lens too, by the way. And really, for what you get for f/0.95 for $800, and it held up fantastically in this battery of tests, that's pretty good stuff. That $799 doesn't seem like a whole lot to me all of a sudden. Continue reading. If you want a f1.2 lens at this focal length, well, let's face it, it will probably come down to whether you want power OIS or not. In other words, do you want image stabilization in the lens, or do you not care if it's there? If you don't, the Olympus 45mm f1.2 Pro at $1,200 is slightly less expensive and has less variation. And what he means by that, coming out of the lens factory, the odds of getting a good copy are very high with that lens, because he tested 8 of them and there was very little variance among the 8 lenses. And you actually get to see the patterns. And this was unlike a lot of the other lenses that had much more variation. So the odds, I wouldn't say it's quality control, but just the odds of getting a good copy of this lens are very high. But by the same token, a good copy of the Panasonic 42.5 at $1,398 is also excellent. So if you get a good copy of the Panasonic, that's also a primo lens. So these are premium optics. You pay a premium price, but you know they deliver at f1.2 and beyond. Okay, now let's go to the less expensive lenses. And I'm reading again. In this range, deliver a lot of bang for the buck. They have very good image quality, and if you don't need the widest aperture, they give you a lot for 1/3 of the price of the wide aperture dual. If I were most interested in focal length for portraits, I probably want the Olympus 45mm f1.8 at $349. Its particular field curvature will help throw everything else other than the subject out of focus. And this is the design of that particular lens. One of the reasons why I like this lens so much is that it has a way of really making the subject looking great and then just sort of making everything else look beautiful. So the subject's really sharp and then everything else is pretty. And that's the best way I can put it. You really just have to see it to believe it. And again, you can actually see graphs on this blog post of why that happens. For landscapes or architectural shooting, the flat field of the Panasonic 42.5 f1.7 would be an advantage. And they're virtually the same price. Panasonic's $348 right now, and the Olympus is $349. f1.8 versus 1.7. And the Panasonic has a built-in image stabilization where the Olympus lens does not. That's because for a long time, Panasonic cameras did not have body image stabilization, so the lenses had to have it. They had to have optical. And now that trend is starting to change a little bit. So that's really fascinating. And one of the things that's a takeaway for me on this is these lenses have their own character. If you're shooting portraits and you want an affordable lens that's also really light and easy to carry, you go with the Olympus 1.8. If you're shooting more architecture and things like that, again, you want the lighter, more affordable lens, you go with the Panasonic 42.5. If you want a lens that just is consistent performer in, you know, all areas, then, you know, that Olympus f1.2 is just a beautiful lens. And then, of course, kind of the surprise here that I wasn't aware of is that the Voigtlander f0.95, if you want a really crazy fast aperture lens that's manual focusing, which will really influence the way you shoot in so many ways between being manual focus and super wide aperture, and is in between the other lenses at $799. You really have a lot to choose from here. And again, getting excited about prime lenses, as I've been this whole podcast, you know, these are definitely throwing more logs on the fire for me. I have two of these lenses. I have the two Olympus ones, and I just love them to death, and I use them differently. And I'll tell you, I'm really tempted about that Voigtlander. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. I have so many things to spend my money on. I really have to think it through. But at the moment, you know, I wouldn't mind adding that to my arsenal. And part of that is because I really love shooting at this focal length. This is one of my favorite focal lengths to shoot with on Micro Four Thirds. So anyway, I thought you'd get a kick out of that. If you love this sort of stuff, go over to the blog post. And if you want to check out any of these individual lenses, I have the link, the links here in the show notes, as I do the link to the blog post. Good stuff. Great job by the Lens Rental blog. Dates announced for the Burney Falls and Lassen Volcanic National Park workshop. Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. So we have dates. So right now on the site, I'm going to try to change it actually before this podcast goes up. But what I've had on there is late September for this workshop that is going to take us to spectacular land. My favorite waterfalls, and then also the wildly, I'm on a different planet, Lassen Volcanic National Park. We're going to do both of those in September, and the dates now, I have them locked in, September 27th, 28th, and 29th of 2018. And the reason why I know I have them locked in is because I got our cabins. Yes, we are going to stay in these really cool cabins. I have two of them. They're big. They have multiple rooms in each cabin. And we're going to stay in these cabins. They will also be our work area. That will be where we live, sometimes where we eat. And they're close to both Burney Falls and to Lassen Volcanic. They're a little closer to Lassen. And they're fantastic. They're fabulous. And we have them locked in. I probably won't send out reservation forms for a little bit yet because we're wrapping up San Francisco, by the way, which is coming up on April 26th to the 28th. I still have one seat open there. If you want to do street photography, if you love what we've been talking about on this podcast, that is the workshop to go to, I'm telling you. So we're still wrapping that up. And then we have the aerial photography workshop in June, and I'm working on the final details of that, and those reservation forms are out. And that's where we're going to cover Hot Air Balloon Festival and do drone photography. Two separate days, right? We're not flying, someone asked me, we're not flying drones at the Hot Air Balloon Festival. That would get me in a lot of trouble. Separate days, separate places. Same workshop, however, it's aerial workshop. And then we're going to do other stuff too. Like I mentioned before, we're going to go to an air museum. We're going to have lunch and watch planes, you know, take off and land. I mean, it's just this aerial. We're just going to totally immerse in it. I was going to say totally get high on it, but that could be interpreted incorrectly, and I don't want that to happen. You get my gist, right? So I'm still really focused on those, but I wanted to let people know who are on the reserve list right now, or for people who are considering getting on the reserve list for this upcoming workshop in September, I wanted to know the dates so they could set those aside, okay? And those dates, again, September 27th, 28th, and 29th. This is going to be an adventure for sure. And if you're on the reserve list, you're in good shape. If you're not and you want to go, I would go over to our workshops page and do that. Get on there. You know, we only have so many places to stay in the cabins. And then I'm not going to let you sleep outside because it gets a little chilly at night in late September. A big thanks to our friends over at Red River Paper. Our biggest supporters and have been for some time. You know, it's funny when I was talking about shooting film and saying that even that gets digitized and you end up looking at things on a small device. This is where we get to break out from that, is when we make a 13 by 19 print. 13 by 19 printers are very affordable, and you would be amazed. Well, you know, right? You know, because you've seen them. Just how different it is looking at an image on a beautiful sheet of 13 by 19 inch paper, which isn't, by printing standards, that big, very easy to do, very affordable, and it changes everything. It just changes everything. And suddenly you go, man, I love this image. Because you get to see it bigger than, you know, a little smartphone screen, or even bigger than on your laptop or whatever. Great stuff. And this is what Red River Paper is all about. They're all about providing that experience for us affordably. And I love them for that. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. And they have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Support them because they are supporting us. And finally, speaking of folks who support us, a big thanks to all the members of our inner circle. You are the folks that make it so that I don't have to worry about going out and getting advertising and being distracted with all that stuff, or having to run ads on the site that you don't want to hear and I don't want to say. Your Patreon membership allows me to talk about photography on this podcast and not be distracted with a bunch of other stuff that none of us want, but that I would be forced to do to keep the show on the air. So thank you very much. And, you know, every one of you who listen, who's not a Patreon member, in your mind, thank the Patreon members for saving you from cruddy ads that would just distract you and bother you. So big thanks to all of our inner circle members. I try to take very good care of you, and I'm constantly thinking of new ways to do that because you just mean so much to me. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. As you can tell, I really like talking about lenses. I hope I get you excited. Try this project that I'm talking about. It's fun. It's really fun. The Anti-Zoom Challenge. You know, get yourself a couple prime lenses and give it a whirl and see what you think. Until next week, have a great week. Go take some pictures. I'll see you here on Tuesday. Bye-bye now.